It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Coming up at noon, as you just heard from Terry, it's Fresh Air. And then at 1 o'clock, the first hour of All Things Considered from NPR. Julie Slater is hosting in Austin Cross's absence at 1. But then Austin will be along for All Things Considered at 3 this afternoon. So he's still working and on the air with us later this afternoon. Full lineup of local and national coverage on KPCC, including Take Two with A. Martinez at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Well, you know, for many years, we've been talking on Air Talk about the promise of hydrogen fuel and a hydrogen economy, which could power vehicles and be a strong alternative to the electricity infrastructure and, you know, charged batteries that, of course, are becoming more popular with vehicles. But where do we stand with the hydrogen economy, and particularly what is California's place with it? Because at least at one time, the state had, you know, said it wanted to be the leader nationally in hydrogen tech. Joining us is LA-based correspondent covering alternative energy for the New York Times, Ivan Penn. Ivan, good morning. Thank you for being with us. So, you know, where do we stand on hydrogen technology? Because we sure aren't hearing much about it.
Good morning. It's good to be with you. And yeah, this is a tremendous moment right now for hydrogen. I remember a few years ago, I had toured the hydrogen research operation at the University of California, Irvine, and they were touting its potential. But as one person has described it, the policies or the technology or the interests, they hadn't all quite aligned. But what we're seeing right now is a growth in the available vehicles, the interest from consumers, and probably most significantly, there is an increase in the numbers of fueling stations, particularly in Southern California. But over the next year or so, we'll see an increase throughout the state.
And what are some of the advantages for the cars that run on hydrogen, and a number of the major manufacturers have made those available? What's the advantage of those overall electric vehicles?
Sure. So one of the big things, of course, when we talk about electric vehicles, one of the criticisms or concerns has been what's been termed the range anxiety, dealt with a great deal by some of the later models of by Tesla and some other vehicle makers. But the thing about hydrogen is these vehicles both fuel in less than 10 minutes, so very similar to gasoline vehicles, and can go 300 plus miles. That has been a tremendous benefit and one of the sources of interest from consumers.
And then, so what's the flip side of that? What has been the challenge in the hydrogen fuel cell technology being able to compete at the level of all electric?
Well, the critical thing is the availability of those fueling stations. Right now, the focal point has been in the lithium-ion style battery electric vehicles. You have far more chargers available for the battery-based EVs as opposed to the hydrogen ones. And you know, I mean, it's always a choice. You know, gasoline, we obviously still have, even in the state of California, it's 10,000 gasoline stations versus, I mean, you're talking about dozens of hydrogen fueling stations. And by comparison, in the lithium-ion battery chargers, I mean, you're seeing those obviously at grocery stores, at Walmarts, at the mall. So they're much more prolific than the hydrogen fueling stations.
We're talking with New York Times energy correspondent Ivan Penn. Also with us from UC Davis, professor of engineering and environmental science, a board member of the California Air Resources Board, Daniel Sperling. He's also the founding director of Davis's Institute of Transportation Studies. Professor Sperling, thank you very much for being with us. Share with us just briefly how the hydrogen technology works to fuel the vehicle.
Well, when we talk about hydrogen, we're actually, hydrogen is the fuel. It's the energy carrier, just like electricity is an energy carrier. And then when you get it into the vehicle, you put it in a fuel tank in the vehicle. And then there's a technology called the fuel cell, which is a device that converts the hydrogen into electricity. And so then you end up with a fuel cell car. A hydrogen car really is an electric car also. It's just that it gets its energy from hydrogen instead of electrons from the plug.
Are there cost differences to fueling a hydrogen versus EV vehicle?
Well, you know, the hydrogen is just getting started. So if you went back 10 years for electric vehicles, the costs have dropped dramatically. It's gone from what was $1,200 per kilowatt hour for a battery 10 years ago to $200 now. It's, you know, a dramatic change. And so as we look at hydrogen, you know, right now hydrogen is mostly made from natural gas. It's an industrial fuel. It's common in refineries. And so the question is, will there be the innovations and the scale economies with hydrogen, with clean hydrogen production, with what we call green hydrogen, meaning it's made from renewable sources? Will this trajectory happen where those costs will drop dramatically and the cost of hydrogen will drop? But, you know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't know, almost no one forecast that batteries would come down like they have. And so it's very plausible the same thing will happen with these electrolyzer devices that convert water into hydrogen.
And what is the advantage of that over using alternative energy production sources like solar and wind to be able to fuel the grid for people to charge their EVs that way? Why? What would make hydrogen more attractive than that?
Well, the future of hydrogen is actually an interesting one because, first of all, the future is probably not cars and light-duty vehicles. It's probably more with trucks and bigger vehicles because the batteries are less suited to the bigger vehicles that go long distances. They're big, they're dense, they're heavy, expensive, whereas hydrogen and fuel cells look like a good solution for a low-carbon, efficient truck operation. And so that's part of it. The other part of it is that the reason why we're talking about it is because as we go to all these renewable energy sources for electricity, solar and wind, you know, the wind only blows some of the time, the sun only shines some of the time. And what happens in the evening? And they need to store that those electrons. And hydrogen might be a good way to store it, is a good way. You take the excess electricity, make it into hydrogen, and then you can either convert it back to electricity or use it in vehicles. So hydrogen is a very flexible option, and it links. That's why we say the hydrogen economy is because it can be used as storage for the electricity grid, can be used for industrial applications, industrial energy, and for cars, trucks, buses, and maybe even planes.
Where would that potentially be stored? At the substation level or at the alternative production facility, let's say the solar array after dark? And so you also have hydrogen on site there. What are the ways it would make the most sense to do that?
Well, it can be stored almost anywhere, just like natural gas. So it can be stored in small quantities at a fuel station and would be, but it can be stored in big aquifers underground like natural gases and, you know, drawn out in that way. So there's different, you know, that's, I mean, that'll be a challenge. We also need a pipeline network. So, you know, I should say the reason why electricity became so popular like 10, 15 years ago when hydrogen didn't. So hydrogen back in the 15 years ago, hydrogen was thought to be the definitive fuel of the future. George Bush, President Bush, was promoting it. Arnold Schwarzenegger at UC Davis, we had the first hydrogen station in the hydrogen highway. I wrote a book about it in 2004 on hydrogen. But what happened is that a realization set in that for hydrogen, you need to build up both the fuel stations network and you got to change the vehicles. Where for the electricity, we already had the grid and the plugs in the house. Yeah. All you had to do was change the vehicle. And so a lot of the sentiment shifted to electricity. But now we're looking at it and say, well, wait a minute. You know, electric vehicles and batteries are fabulous. Costs come down, really clean, but it doesn't necessarily work in all applications. So that's why we're paying more attention to hydrogen again.
We're talking with UC Davis Professor of Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy, Daniel Sperling. Professor Sperling is also the founding director of UC Davis's Institute of Transportation Studies, and he's a member of the California Air Resources Board as well. Also with us, New York Times energy correspondent Ivan Penn. If you have questions for our guests about California's role in efforts to establish the hydrogen economy, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Ivan Penn, where does California sit with this compared to other states? Are we the leader with prioritizing hydrogen?
Well, with a lot of the clean energy economy in general, California does stand out. It does lead in including in this hydrogen area. And some of that is because of the need for the state to deal with issues of climate change. As we saw this year and in recent years, the historic damage from wildfires that have been made worse by the impact of climate change. So you see the state working to find some resolutions to how we can decarbonize both the electric grid and the transportation sector.
All right. And Professor Sperling, I wanted to share this with you. Garrett in Rolling Hills Estate said, what hasn't been talked about yet is not just that there are only 13 stations in the state, but the compressors are always breaking down, and the supply chain of getting hydrogen tanks is very spotty. I'm wondering when the state is going to get behind getting the supply chain and technology improved. Professor Sperling?
Well, good question. So, first of all, there are about 45 stations, and there's commitments for probably another 100 or so. So it's much better than what you were saying. But, you know, I owned a hydrogen car and operated for 3 years until about a year ago. And I experienced some of those problems, and it was frustrating. But I think, you know, part of it is some of the early companies that were involved were not really consumer-based companies. They didn't really care that much about the fuel stations. They didn't see that as their future, so they didn't really maintain them well. And so, you know, and we're just learning. We're learning, you know, and reliability, backup. So the new stations, when I fueled my car, it was one station in the whole Sacramento region. You know, that's a million people. And it had only one pump at that station.
That's kind of funny and sad.
I know. I mean, the good news is it wasn't too far from me. The bad news is that if it went down, it was my only car.
Yeah.
The real problem. But now the new stations that are being built have more than two pumps. They're built, you know, there's a much bigger network. So the reliability, yes, the reliability and the investment is growing. You know how companies like Shell which really is in the business of the retail fuel business, and they're really doing a better job than some of the early ones in terms of committing to creating technology that's reliable, and they are responsive to the consumer market in ways that some of the others were not.
What's this look like internationally? Are there other countries that have put a great deal of emphasis on this?
Well, initially it was Germany and Japan. Germany's got a lot of stations, but they've kind of faltered in getting a lot of vehicles out there. But as Ivan was saying, and then Japan, so Japan, the Olympics they were going to hold this past summer was going to be featuring hydrogen, and Toyota is a big proponent of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. But, you know, there, as Ivan was saying, the interest in hydrogen worldwide has just been growing at a very steep rate. I pay attention to this. I get email probably almost every day about another report, another conference, another webinar, another association being formed on hydrogen. So there's a sense in the industrial sector, in the energy sector, that this is something that's important. And I think a lot of it is because a lot of them aren't in the battery or electricity business. And so they're looking for how do they, like oil and gas companies, you know, how are they going to stay in business in the future? They're not, you know, they're dabbling a little bit with a few charging stations, but that's not really their expertise. Fuels like this is their expertise. And so I think that's part of it. We're seeing industrial companies and oil and gas companies starting to get more serious.
It does sound, though, like there's a whole chicken and egg thing. As you said, you know, the environmentally friendly ways of being able to make hydrogen, how you build the pipeline, the whole distribution system, and you need cars so there to be customers for it, but how many cars are you going to get till the infrastructure? It's where we had the electricity grid already there, and that helps solve the problem. You know, Brendan in Van Nuys says, I'm a physicist and did a study 13 years ago on hydrogen storage, and the problem we found is that, you know, storing it was very difficult, it was costly, making it in a safe manner was very challenging. So Brendan's asking, what's changed in the 13 years since he studied it?
Oh, a lot has changed. You know, when we had our first hydrogen station at UC Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger came and blessed it, and I've got all my photos with him, you know, everyone at that time, people were wearing these big hazmat outfits because they were afraid of the flammability of it. So we've learned how to handle it much better. We know when it's safe. There's sensors in the cars. On the one hand, we've also learned about how to manufacture it more cheaply. And actually, one of the things we're looking at going in the future is maybe we can still make it from natural gas, but then we can have carbon capture sequestration, which means you capture the carbon and put it in the ground, and then you have a zero carbon fossil fuel. So that's another reason why some of these energy companies are interested as well. And then, of course, the vehicle technology has gotten so much better. You know, Toyota and Hyundai and Honda and some of the others have invested, you know, massive amounts of money in terms of building these fuel cell vehicles. And at the end of the day, really, the story is that if we're really serious about reducing deep decarbonization, you know, batteries are an important part of the solution set, but we need something more. So there's that sentiment also pulling hydrogen into the market that we need another option. We can't put all our eggs in one basket.
Professor Sperling, thank you, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it. UC Davis, Professor of Engineering and Environmental Science and Policy, founding director of UCD's Institute of Transportation Studies. And my thanks to New York Times alternative energy correspondent based here in Los Angeles, Ivan Penn, joining us to talk about his writing on this very topic of the hydrogen economy. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC and the KPCC app. I want to hear from you right now as we're looking at what's going to be a very different Thanksgiving because of the pandemic. What is the very best Thanksgiving dish you ever ate, whether at a friend's house, family member's place, maybe you made it yourself. The very best dish ever at Thanksgiving. 866-893-KPCC or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Call right now to get in early on this. We'll be back in 90 seconds.